free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Hello and welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Drew back at the controls after a well-deserved vacation. And Bill Cameron celebrating the retirement of a colleague on campus today. And so he will be joining the show in progress. I think he plans to be here by the end of the first hour, depending on a couple of different variables. But we've got Carter from on the line. Just Carter. It's all you need. It's like I only call Rivaldo. But
that's
Carter's
that's
here.
Fair.
Yeah, Carter's here to hang out for a little while. We're taking your phone calls as well. Happy to report. I think the headline, and it's not because Drew is back, but I do want to say shout out to everybody at Auburn Network Radio Alabama. We had an issue with the podcasts at the beginning of the month. I don't know all of the technical language to it. I still use like a dial-up internet, so I'm not the person to ask. My phone has a keyboard, a physical keyboard attached to it when I use to send text messages. So I'm not the person to tell you about what went wrong technically and how we got it fixed. But the podcasts are working again on Apple and Spotify, and those were the big two that we've had an issue with for the last week plus. But you could always get the podcast on ESPNAU.com. You could always get them on the Google podcasting website. But now, yeah, Apple and Spotify are back and functional again. So big shout out to everybody who worked hard to get that back into order, because we heard about it on social media. I know Bill and I both got some personal messages as well from people wondering why the podcasts weren't working. So yeah, so thanks again to everybody at Auburn Network. But the podcasts are working again, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. I should mention that when we talk about the podcast as well. They sponsor the whole deal, and then they also sponsor the text box. Now that Drew is back, the text box is open again, 334-564-1840. We got to devise a better system than just routing them only to Drew's phone, because when he's not here, some text messages may go unanswered. We had some people, we were deciphering schedules yesterday, and we had, I guess we had it wrong at first. I don't want to throw Jacob under the bus, but he's the one who shouted this out, and I trusted him, that Kentucky hadn't been Auburn hadn't been to Kentucky since the 2010. We'd forgotten about.
I think that was probably me.
We forgot the 2015 Thursday night game that Auburn played, which I guess is a Sean White come from behind win.
Yeah, which
I didn't remember a ton of specifics about it, to be totally honest. I do remember Auburn beating Kentucky in the 2015 season, but I may.
The Kentucky quarterback, we figured out in the game, he went like 27 of 44 for 359 and only threw an interception, like didn't throw a touchdown pass somehow, despite almost throwing for 400 yards.
You know, red zone sometimes difficulties. Kentucky didn't have a ton of big play threats back then. So anyways, we were talking about it because we raised the possibility that should the SEC decide, okay, we're going to send teams to places they haven't been in a while, some likely candidates for Auburn would have been Kentucky, Missouri. Auburn's only been to Missouri once. It was the 2017 season. There's also Tennessee. Auburn hasn't been to Knoxville since 2013.
Yes.
But dealing Auburn road games against Alabama, Georgia, and Tennessee the same season, again, without, you know, I don't, it's tough to project exact, you know, what these teams are going to look like in any. Here's my stance on what teams are going to be in 24. I feel confident, based on history, that Bama, Georgia, and LSU are going to be pretty good.
Yeah, agreed.
If I really want to bet on history, Oklahoma's probably going to be pretty good, although that ignores the recent history of last season and the fact that they could have a new coach in 2024 if things don't improve in 2023.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there are other programs in the conference, including Auburn, including Florida, including Texas, where it's, you know, it's based in Tennessee. You know, there's tradition to speak of that lets you think, yeah, they usually field a pretty talented, pretty good team.
Mm-hmm.
But specifically in 24, I mean, there feels like a spectrum of teams that could be the fourth best team in the league, could be the, assuming Georgia, Bama, and LSU are your top three, there are six, maybe eight teams that slot in between 4 and 10, 11. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And that makes the projection of who got a tough schedule, who got an easy schedule. I mean, you asked me before the show, and I really boiled it down to, well, who got Bama and LSU? and who got Bama and Georgia? You know, who doesn't play Bama or Georgia? Like, that feels to me like, you know, the easiest way to feel confident about what these schedules like. Because teams, there are a lot of dice rolls.
In
Florida, Auburn, Tennessee, the A&M. Texas, you know, there's a lot of teams where it's like, I mean, yeah, sure, they could be pretty good.
I mean, A&M should have talent with what they've brought in, which is
who's their coach going to be?
Exactly.
How many of those guys that they brought in are going to be on that team?
That's fair. That's 100% fair. When you were talking about Kentucky and Tennessee specifically, I would say that the Kentucky success recently has been due to they had a really great offensive line for a long time, and then they had the tragic passing of their offensive line coach, and then it started to decline, and then they've been buoyed a little bit here lately by pretty high-level quarterback play, and Devin Leary walking out the door after next year. I'd say it's harder for them to replicate considering what Tennessee, I think they're recruiting a little better, and they've got that five-star quarterback waiting in the wings this next year behind Joe Milton. I would say that I would err towards them being better than Kentucky specifically.
Oh, sure. And I think history would also tell you Tennessee's usually better than Kentucky. 100%. Even if the last 5-10 years would buck that trend a little bit more than ever. So, yeah, I mean, so let's... 334-321-1390 is the phone number. That's the Kia of Auburn hotline brought to you by our friends at Kia of Auburn, kiaofauburn.com, where you're always number one. You can also text the show 334-564-1840. So let's get into the schedule. What do you think, like, snap reaction to Auburn's draw? Like, what did you think when you found out these are the eight teams Auburn's going to play in 24? What was the first thing that you, what was your takeaway?
Well, knowing that Auburn was always going to get Alabama and Georgia on the road.
Yeah, we were really finding out the other six.
Yeah, knowing that.
And I got the game
missing LSU, I thought was big for Auburn. From a just fairness of schedule perspective, getting Oklahoma at home rather than Texas.
There is worth pointing out, nobody in the conference drew Bama, Georgia, and LSU in 24. So it sounds like if you're looking at balance, that feels deliberate, right? Because that could have been, you could have done that to Tennessee because they already have Bama and Georgia on the schedule. I suppose you could have, I mean, really, you could have done it to anyone, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's nothing, there was no rule saying, there was no official conference policy saying a team can't play Alabama, Georgia, and LSU in the 2024 season, but that's the way things shook out. And it seems like that was maybe out of a belief that it's tough to balance a schedule that has those three teams on it because of their track records over, you know, whatever. We don't know the algorithm the conference decided to use.
Yeah.
But if you're weighing recent success, boy, is it tough to balance a schedule if you put Bama, Georgia, and LSU on it because they've won the last, 10 conference titles? Like, who am I? Who bucks that? Auburn? Does Auburn 13?
Auburn 13 would be the last one that's not won by one of those three teams.
Yeah, so there you go. So it'd be tough to balance a schedule that includes those three teams, and nobody has to. Like my thing. So Auburn LSU is something that you know, I think that was a rivalry. On one hand, folks
went by the wayside for a year at least,
and now we know it probably will not be a yearly thing whenever they adjust the schedules because it feels like, you know, just there's too many other things to consider within this. I mean, it's possible, but if Auburn's playing Alabama and Georgia already and they're factoring things like balance in, it's like we said, it's tough to balance a schedule if you're talking about the top, either the top three or three of the top four, depending on your metrics to figure it out. So I wasn't as surprised to see LSU by the wayside the other thing to consider with LSU's schedule is that they have a lot of games that I think folks would consider rivalry games or longstanding.
We talked about Arkansas. We talked about Alabama. We talked about Florida. Yep. We even talked about A&M, what that has turned into and how much those two fan bases hate each other right
now. Yeah, A&M would be, I mean, if you were doing the, we made this point yesterday, if the SEC had decided to do one permanent rival and seven rotators, you know, on an eight-game schedule, LSU's permanent opponent would probably be A&M.
Yeah.
Because everyone else has a dance partner already as a as an arch rival. Arkansas's got Missouri. Oklahoma and Texas have each other. Schools in the Mississippi, you know, they have the Egg Bowl. Alabama and Auburn. Florida has Georgia. Like, there's reason to believe that A&M. And I know it's not that geographically. We talked about, you know, it's still 5.5 hours or so Baton Rouge to College Station. But that's a rivalry that's I can see why the conference wanted to preserve it.
Yeah, I mean, it's turned into something in a very short period of time that I think has been very heated. You've gotten some great games. You got the 7-overtime game that I think really ignited that to a different level where those fan bases legitimately hate each other at the end of the year.
I don't know if we're going to get Texas A&M every year because they're going to be really important. You know, keeping Texas Oklahoma is going to be really important. Mm-hmm. I feel like A&M LSU could be a game now that, like, they're going to play that one. I feel confident they're going to play that one going forward for a really long time. Speaking of A&M, Auburn draws Texas A&M as a home game alongside Oklahoma. Oklahoma's going to be a huge game. That feels like that feels like Penn State last year. And I'm glad I was calling for it, assuming they weren't touching Alabama, Georgia. The home game I wanted the most in 2024 was Oklahoma because it was a chance for a historic visit from a program that is a super heavyweight in the world of college football, and that's going to be like the Penn State game. I know that didn't work out for Auburn, but this is an opportunity for Auburn to host a school that's never come to Auburn before for a first time ever game, first time in the regular season, and it's going to be like that. That's going to be a moment. And that's going to be a game that folks, I think, are really going out of their way to come to Auburn to see because it's gonna feel like a big and I think for Oklahoma and Texas, a lot of those first time ever visits are going to feel that way. That's what's really cool about their first few years in the league. But I really wanted Oklahoma at home on the schedule in 24, and I got exactly what I wanted.
And there's still plenty of hype around Oklahoma coming to Jordan Hare, like you said. But if you're looking at it from if I were to put a percentage on it, I'd say there's probably a 55% chance or better that Texas is better than Oklahoma in 24, just based on the talent on the roster and trajectory of the two programs. Because we've talked about if Venables doesn't have a good year, could there be a new coach at Oklahoma in 24? I think Sark is going to have a strong year in 23. I think he's going to be around in 24.
Same question, though. I think if he doesn't, like, is he how secure is his footing if they're not good this year?
Yeah, and then I go back to, you know, that you're going to have at least an on paper very talented quarterback at Texas starting in 24. Whether it's Quinn Ewers coming back, whether it's Arch Manning. But whether only, it's Malik
that
Murphy.
That only ramps up expectations, though. Like, yeah, it really does. Like, that only makes it to where it's like, oh, boy, you better win, or else you don't have that excuse.
Yes. In the silo of just 2024.
I get why you're confident about the team, though.
I feel like Texas is probably more likely. But, again, like you said, it's all so up in the air.
Yeah, predicting these teams after, like, Bama, Georgia, and LSU have the kind of recent track records. And I know LSU had back-to-back seasons where they were unspectacular before the Brian Kelly arrival. They had a national championship before that, but it's like I get the confidence there. Everyone else, it's a hunch.
Yes,
right. It's a lot of hunches that since you don't feel great about Florida in 24 maybe, and it's like that's a you know what I mean. That's a hunch. I have no idea what that program is going to look like.
I think they're going to be dreadful in 23, and I think that's going to force them to make a change. I think they're going to be 5-7, 4-8 this upcoming season.
But I think they could. We were talking about this. You know that could. That could lead to a new coach who brings in a ton of talent.
Yeah, but I mean,
it's, I know
fair.
What I mean. Like, it's
very, very
this is
fair.
This is so different it's than just, it used to be as far as projecting what a team's roster is going to look like 18 months from now. Because we used to have a decent handle on it.
Every argument you could say about a year one head coach and how much can he turn over the roster, how good can they possibly be, is the exact same arguments that other fan bases would use against Auburn in 23, right? 100%.
And I think just like with Harsin, nothing against Billy Napier, but if Florida had to make a change because they just tried a group of five coach with a good track record, this next guy is going to have, I feel like it's going to have major serious Power 5 credentials as a head coach before Florida brings him in. I don't think they
Which Lanning was the guy that we thought about.
Dan Lanning, but it's
could A&M intercept that before it ever happens?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there could be a bidding war for Dan Lanning services all of a sudden or something. But like, so much is up for grabs in 24. I suspect that Auburn, because usually Auburn and A&M, you know, I don't know. The A&M's another one where I would think that an A&M matchup is more favorable than an LSU matchup. And so yes, if it came down to giving Auburn
100%
LSU at home or A&M at home, it's a more favorable draw.
And you could have a year one head coach, which we don't really fully know what it means, but
Vanderbilt, Kentucky, and Missouri are all programs where, based on history, you would think Auburn goes into your average season with the advantage over those three schools.
Vanderbilt, absolutely. I think they're stuck in 16th, and they got a pretty difficult draw as well. But when I look at the teams on Auburn's schedule, KJ Jefferson, gone at Arkansas after this year. Oklahoma, Dylan Gabriel's gone, and potentially new coach.
I should have included Arkansas on that list. I would say Arkansas, mm-hmm. Vanderbilt, Kentucky, and Missouri, and to a degree A&M.
A&M,
because more often than not, like those are five games where your average Auburn team beats your average one of those teams.
Yes,
over the last pick your number.
Vanderbilt, you will be better than A&M. Could be year one head coach, but regardless, I think that's easier than LSU. When I look at Kentucky, Devin Leary's gone. What happens when the high-level, very talented quarterbacks leave Lexington? What do they have waiting in the wings? I mean, Missouri, that could be a new head coach.
It's five games, to be honest with you, where you feel like
I think Auburn should be better than
Auburn's usually better than the opponent. And then Oklahoma is one to me where to acknowledge history, it's hard to say, you know, based on history, your average Auburn team is more skilled, more likely to contend than your average Oklahoma team. But there are variables there.
I would say now,
we'll see what the 2024 Oklahoma team looks like. And if it's if things are turned around by this current administration, or if they're breaking in a new regime, or what it looks like. But that's going to be really regardless of what the teams are between now and then, because it's the occasion of Oklahoma's first game against Auburn ever.
Atmosphere is going to be awesome.
First regular season.
There's going to be some extra juice.
That's going to be enormous. And then the other two games are Bama and Georgia on the road.
God, it's
a quality schedule, but it's top heavy. And then,
am I crazy right now to say that looking at this,
Auburn's going all the way? Yeah, go for it.
To say that A&M scares me more than Oklahoma in the 24 schedule. If I were an Auburn fan,
I think
it's really close.
You could take, you know what?
I think it's a razor's edge.
There's an argument to be made. I would probably guess right now, and it's hard to, I would guess that the 2024 Oklahoma Sooners are better than the 2024 A&M Aggies. That's my prediction I don't know who's going to coach either. They could both be first-year head coaches.
Josh Heupel and Dan Lanning.
Ooh, I like it. I think that they're both. Is Lanning A&M's guy? Is he Texas enough?
I mean, they could go Sonny Dykes.
Is Lane Kiffin getting one of those jobs?
No way.
Come on. Come on.
Well, no. Lane Kiffin's not getting one of those jobs because I think they're about to wildly underperform everybody's expectations. I think Ole Miss is about to have a really bad year.
A good season. Because I don't think you turn down I don't think you turn down Ole Miss for Auburn most of the time. But or turn down Auburn for Ole Miss. Most of the time, but I don't think you say no to the.
The downfall of Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss starts in week two this year when Ole Miss goes 2-2 Lane and takes that loss.
Ooh,
that's my prediction.
Is that right? I guess that coach could be on some list too.
Look, after
group of five though,
after the Tulane game, if you lose that, you've got Georgia Tech at Alabama, LSU, Arkansas all in a row.
We'll do more schedule stuff after the break. We are way behind, so we'll bring it back. We are. You're listening to The Drive. Stick around.
My joints aren't with 382-7502 or email The Drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back. Hour number one of the Thursday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Carter hanging out with us from On the Line, which you can catch from 2 to 4 right here on ESPN 106.7. They have podcasts, too, however you get your podcasts. Drew at the controls after a week abroad. Drew was out on assignment for the last week, and so we're happy to have our producer, Drew, back. You can join in the conversation, 334-321-1390, the number to dial. Bill Cameron will be joining the show shortly. He had a retirement party on campus for a colleague, and so Bill wanted to pay his respects before he came into the show today, and it's no problem at all. Carter's hanging out after doing On the Line. U.S. Open going on right now, and I believe, so it's, you got Xander and Scottie Scheffler both near the top, which makes things a little bit tough, right? Because you got a couple of similar looking names at the top of the scoreboard there, but it's
Ricky and Xander both shot 62, went 8 under.
They're both 8 under and at the top of the leaderboard. Scheffler and Bryson among the players at 3 under. Next up on the scoreboard through the first round. So yeah, a couple of really impressive rounds. I know there's a few golfers still out there because it's on the West Coast, but right now the leaders in the clubhouse, Xander and Ricky Fowler, both 8 under at the U.S. Open on the first day of the action, just outside Los Angeles, California. So we'll keep you posted if anything really interesting happens there. You think either Xander or Ricky Fowler holds on and wins the whole thing? Wire to wire?
I want so badly for Ricky Fowler to finally win a major. Like I picked him every major for like 4 years, and then he just fell off the face of the earth like for a year and a half there, and he's back. I don't think it's sustainable to keep shooting 62s. I think somebody's going to run him down, but I would want nothing more than Ricky Fowler to win a major.
I'm a Cantlay guy, and I don't see him there at the top of the scoreboard. Don't know where he finished up today, but I got it back.
So what is your opinion on pace of play and Patrick Cantlay?
My UCLA Bruin Patrick Cantlay. I think he can do whatever he wants. All right, guy does no wrong. Leave him alone about pace of play. I like Colin Morikawa a lot too.
Oh, I love him.
Colin Morikawa's got he's got the kind of game where, you know, it feels like I'm going to be expecting him to contend at pretty much every major for a while. So we'll see what the, and then Rory's making a bit of a push too. I know Rory's under par as well. Rory is top
two
four.
Under through two.
He's top four, top five in the odds pretty much every single major.
It's been rougher this year, though.
But it's been a decade since he's won one, mm-hmm. which is remarkable to me that a guy who, and it goes to show what kind of game he has that people acknowledge that he's near the top of the the odds board every single time he takes the course. But yeah,
didn't he backdoor a second place at the Masters last year?
I think he did. Yeah, no, he's finished near the top. I think he has a couple of top five finishes.
He has one round that puts him kind of behind the eight ball, and then he goes nuts in a final round and climbs into the top five. But he's never, that one round sets him far enough back that he could never win one again.
Right, but I would want to see if the big names can stay near the top, and if either Xander or Fowler can keep going.
Did you watch the Full Swing thing on Netflix?
No, I did not.
Gotcha. If you do watch that, I thought it was pretty good.
Spieth?
It was Spieth and JT in the first episode. Then the second episode, I think, was Scottie Scheffler and Brooks Koepka.
Yeah, I know some people like the Spieth portion of it. I might.
Sahith Theegala, they do an episode on him. He's awesome. I love him. I will be a fan of him forever. And his parents are great, too. They get so excited to the point that he literally has to tell them, like, hey, like, you can't be out here on the course like yelling and screaming and clapping every time I hit a good shot, because that's not the way golf works.
334-321-1390 is the number to dial. We're going to talk to Jake Crane from Crane & Company in hour number two. He pushed his usual Tuesday appearance to a little bit later in the week. We're going to have Justin Ferguson in the studio tomorrow. Justin is back from his trip overseas, and so we'll talk with Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer on tomorrow's show. Bill Cameron expected to join us. Love to hear from you. We'll talk some more of the news in the world of Auburn sports, including a pretty significant commitment making a decision in the last day or so. We'll talk about that when we come back. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to The Drive.
Cobb.
Welcome back. Hour number one of the Thursday edition of The Drive. Dan and Carter in the studio, Drew with the controls. Love to hear from you, 334-321-1390. Any thoughts you have on the Auburn scheduling news, the SEC scheduling news from yesterday, and any of the implications therein. Oklahoma will come to Auburn in 2024, first game ever in the regular season between those two programs. Oklahoma's first visit ever to Jordan-Hare Stadium. You also will have Auburn's first visit to Missouri since 17, mm-hmm. Auburn's first visit to Lexington since 15, Auburn's first visit from Vanderbilt since 2016. It's going to be about 8 years since Vanderbilt played at Jordan-Hare Stadium, and you'll have a couple games off the schedule. Ole Miss, Mississippi State. I thought that they might work to preserve the Ole Miss game because Hugh Freeze would be going back to Oxford in 2024 as the Ole Miss head coach.
I thought so.
Talked to Jason Caldwell about that yesterday. He thought there might be a desire by ESPN, even more so than the Auburn LSU game. You know, there might be a desire by ESPN to keep the Auburn-Ole Miss series alive so that Hugh Freeze could go to Ole Miss in 2024 as Auburn's head coach. That game will not happen. No Auburn, no Alabama on the schedule for either Ole Miss or Mississippi State, which is
interesting considering the amount of times that Auburn's played State, right?
Yeah, surprising. Well, both schools. I mean, Auburn's played Ole Miss every year, I believe, since 89, and then Auburn and State go back a very long time. That series dates back to the 1900s, the 19-teens. I mean, something crazy like that. We looked at some of the numbers yesterday. The Auburn State series goes back a very long time, and they were I think you can. I mean, it's games that date back over
96 times.
Yeah, over a century, nearly 100 meetings between the two, and that's a series disrupted by conference growth and things like that, which is disappointing to see. I would think that's something that it was to find room for all of these games. Decisions were made, and it does seem like the SEC prioritized, at least in some of the cases, sending schools to places that they hadn't been in a while, or places that the rotations had not. You mentioned Florida, like that's a game Florida hasn't been to. Florida hasn't been to Auburn since we looked it up. I think it's 11. Was Florida's last visit to
yes.
to Auburn, and it's been just once since the 06 game ended. So I mean, you think about Florida's been to Auburn once in 15 years. That's one that was disrupted because the rotation. Florida was going to come to Auburn in 12, but A&M's arrival into the league changed the way that the conference could balance these things, and then from there the SEC had to sort of work from there. But it's.
I agree with you that they did a good job, I think, doing that for the most part, trying to find places where teams hadn't been, except for Kentucky. Have you looked at how just bland and boring their schedule is?
Who's Kentucky? Who did Kentucky drive? Not seen their eight teams.
They get Auburn, Georgia, South Carolina, Vanderbilt at home.
Well, South Carolina's become a bit of a rivalry because of the comments between Stoops and Beamer. Beamer said Stoops said something about glasses, stupid sunglasses, and dancing at media days. Beamer thought it was a shot specifically at what he'd been doing on social media, and then when Beamer beat Kentucky this year, he took a moment in the locker room to put sunglasses on and dance, and the video went viral. So that's added some juice of late. I think I'm surprised, and we talked about it with Arkansas and A&M. Division play created a scenario where everyone had to play either Alabama or Georgia because they were in your division. One of the two was in your division. Now you've got teams, two of them, that don't play either of them, Bama or Georgia, which is a favorable draw compared to just about everybody else. Kentucky has a home game against Georgia, which is that's a heavyweight. Then where do they go?
Their road games are Florida, Ole Miss, Tennessee, and Texas. And the issue that Lance Dahl on the line today brought up is you're playing everybody in the SEC East except for Missouri. So, like, you basically just reloaded the Eastern Division and then added Auburn and Ole Miss and Texas in there to round it out.
Right, and, I mean, I guess
it's not a lot of variance.
Well, the thinking there would be that they kept a couple of division rivalries alive with Kentucky, and I guess they tried to do that when they could. Kentucky, I mean, teams like Florida and South Carolina and Georgia and South Carolina, like, I mean, teams like Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, and Tennessee. You know, I can see why the conference wanted to. Is Vanderbilt on that schedule?
Yes, they are.
And Vanderbilt. So I can see why the conference wanted to protect some of those rivalries if they could, because they did. I mean, some of those predate conference play even. And you know, it's you could have sent Kentucky to exotic locales and things like that. But I sort of get why. Like, that wouldn't bother me too much.
Yeah.
As a Kentucky fan, because you get to play some of these teams that
I think it was just like the consensus seemed to be that from Kentucky fans is that it's a little bit more bland and boring than some of the other teams got.
Is State on that schedule?
No, they're okay, not. So it's Ole Miss instead.
So Kentucky, and I think that tells you about that rivalry, because they're Kentucky and State play every year right now as part of, like, that's State's cross division rival. And so I think if you decide the cross-division rival isn't worth protecting, that opens you up to maybe have more division opponents.
Yeah,
because, and they could have opened up the rotation and sent Kentucky
about
to other places, I suppose. But no, I think I've seen people complaining about Florida's schedule being all, you know, treacherous, and Florida does have out-of-conference games against UCF and Florida State and I think Miami.
I don't think there's all that. I mean, their non-conference makes it very difficult. But I don't think it's all that bad.
Well, I guess something was going on viral about how difficult Florida's schedule is in 2024, and it's like
you don't have to go to Athens because you're going to Jacksonville.
There's no Bama. There's LSU at home, and there's Georgia at a neutral site. I mean, to me, it's
tough, but it's not crazy. Difficult.
No, I mean, I think maybe teams like Tennessee and Auburn, because they play Bama and Georgia, you know, have an argument that they have a couple of the tougher schedules, but. To think of Florida's schedule as really difficult because they've got Tennessee and Ole Miss and, you know, schools like South Carolina or whatever, but it's like Kentucky. It's like that involves a lot of projection about how these teams are going to be able to sustain recent and in some cases success that doesn't really correspond with what they've been historically.
You mentioned the cross division rivals, if they're worthy of keeping. Thank God they kept that historic rivalry of South Carolina and A&M alive.
Yeah, the leftovers, the two teams, you know, left over because
they're like, yeah, you don't really go with anybody, so good luck.
Well, South Carolina and Arkansas played each other every year when they first introduced divisions, and then when Missouri joined the league, we thought, well, okay, like Arkansas and Missouri border each other, like that makes sense.
That makes sense.
And
for
then
sure.
It just leaves two teams left over in Texas Tech
and
or Texas
A&M
and South Carolina. They're going to keep at least for 1 year. I don't know if that's going to be a permanent thing.
Yeah,
but,
no, I think that's going to go away in 25.
Right, and then they did in fact schedule Georgia to go to Alabama and to Texas. I mean, that was I was.
It just feels like it's so rare that we see Georgia and Alabama play each other in the regular season.
Right. That was something that Monday morning Doug Amos asked me about when I was on the Max Roundtable was the idea of going. Did I think there was going to be an Alabama versus Georgia regular season game in 24? And you know, I kind of thought that they would maybe keep the two apart in case you know, an SEC championship game meeting between the two, you know, so it wouldn't be a rematch. At the same time, I saw, you know, I could understand why a regular season meeting between those two would be a huge game for ESPN, and apparently reportedly ESPN had some say in what these what these matchups were going to be. So it made more and more sense the way I thought about it. And if you're looking to make Georgia's schedule more difficult, and pretty much any change to Georgia's schedule.
Yeah, because the 23 schedule's a joke.
Yeah, so pretty much any change to Georgia's schedule is probably going to make it more difficult if you incorporate more SEC West teams or Texas or Oklahoma. But to send Georgia to Tuscaloosa and to Austin adds a pair of imposing road games to Georgia's schedule that weren't previously scheduled for the 2024 season. I know they've got Clemson in the regular season in 2024 as well. So suddenly Georgia's got some really impressive games on that schedule. You know, if that team puts up the kind of record they've put up in recent seasons there, you know, they would be, it would involve going to beating some, you know, historically very good teams in places where they don't lose very often, because road games at Alabama, at Texas, I don't know off the top of my head where the Georgia-Clemson game is, if it's a road game or a neutral site game.
I want to say it's neutral site.
Yeah, I think it's a kickoff classic.
They run it back later in the in a few years. They'll do a home and home kind of around 2030. I know if we go to 9 SEC games, Georgia's schedule in 2030 will have 12 Power 5 teams, because they'll play Clemson, Ohio State, Georgia Tech, and 9 SEC teams.
Sure, and Georgia will, I mean, I think that any, like I said, any change to the current schedule was probably going to make Georgia's schedule more difficult.
Yes.
Because you were going to, especially the, you know, tearing up SEC East play and making it more balanced in that regard. I didn't know if Alabama or LSU would find their way onto Georgia's schedule. You figured Oklahoma or Texas would. And
yeah.
You figured if
should Georgia try to get, like, do right by the 2015 team and wear the black jerseys into Tuscaloosa, because, you know, when they wore all black because they were going to a
was
funeral.
That 15?
Yeah, and they got blown out 38-10 at home.
Okay, there was another game where they wore the black jerseys though, right?
They wore the black jerseys what in 07 when
game.
Auburn was a giant favorite and just ran Auburn out of the building.
No,
I think Auburn was a pretty big favorite, weren't they?
No, I don't think so. I don't think Auburn's favorite that. No. And then you had Auburn might have been ranked higher, but I don't even know if that's true in that game. And then you had Georgia wore the black jerseys again in the Hawaii game that year.
Oh yeah, it was. That Georgia team was better than I thought they were.
No, Sean Moreno came on strong second half of the season. And then the 06 team was Auburn was favored, and then Georgia came into Jordan-Hare Stadium and upset Auburn in that game. But that was not the blackout. The blackout was a year later.
Yeah,
and
you're right. You're right.
Georgia wore them again in the Hawaii game that year and beat Hawaii up with them. And then in the bowl game, the Colt Brennan bowl game.
That the 06 game, that's got to be one that you just kick yourself for, because you're 9-1 coming into the game, number 5 in the country. They're 6-4.
That's one of those games though where from the first snap you realize that your offensive line has a problem with their defensive line. Like from the very first snap of the game, and it's like, oh no,
Cox had a really bad stat line.
It's 4-12, 4-12.
4-12, 35 yards, 1 touchdown.
Is this the
4 picks?
Is this the 06?
Yes.
Yeah. So this is I remembered 4-12 off the top of my head. That was a game where from the very '06
they also got sacked 4 times.
The 06 Arkansas game is a little bit like that too. Like from the very beginning of the game, you realize there's a problem at the line of scrimmage, and it's going to be a problem for the entire game. But anyways. Maybe Georgia breaks out the black uniform.
God, they did both of the Auburn lost. Yeah. I forgot they lost both those at home.
Yeah. We'll talk about this during the commercial break. We'll be back with more. You're listening to the Thursday edition of The Drive.
DQ presents
one of the Thursday edition of The Drive. Dan and Carter in the studio. Drew at the controls. Love to hear from you. We're going to talk with Jake Crane from Crane & Company in hour number 2. Talking about the schedule reveal, we have some recruiting info. We'll get to it momentarily. As a matter of fact, we got Bill Cameron on the phone. I'm under the impression. Let's just check in with him. How you doing, Bill?
I'm doing fine. I'm on the way back. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So you'll be in the studio pretty soon. Okay, so we'll.
I should be there in time for the second hour, unless we got a wreck or something along the way. But,
okay,
yeah.
Well, if it's hopefully it's not caused by you broadcasting live from your car as you drive to work.
I do have Bluetooth, so I don't have to have the phone. You know, the phone's in my pocket.
All right,
that's fine.
How was the retirement party for our colleague?
It was good. I gave Dr. Cabin your best. So.
Oh, excellent, excellent. That's wonderful.
What I wasn't expecting, and here's one of the things. And Carter, maybe, you know, maybe one day you'll have this happen to you. Dan, it's probably happened to you, where you're somewhere and Dr. Awad, our faculty leader, who's really the head of the department, mm-hmm. came up to me and said, Dr. Eden, who is the dean of the College of Engineering, Dr. Eden can't make it, so you're the MC.
Oh, there you go.
I have been.
Hey, okay, that's great.
I have been thrust into action before as a host in situations where someone suddenly became unavailable. There was a situation earlier this year where I thought I was going to have to officiate a wedding. On the fly. Luckily,
were you like
that,
pulling up the website to get certified?
I was watching famous speeches from watching famous benedictions.
You need some credentials. Don't you need something to be able to actually officiate? Or was somebody else there that was, you know, could legally marry them?
I think they had a plan in place, and I would have been more, you know, it would
have
been
just
more
in for show.
Yeah, I would have been a master of ceremonies more than anyone making any sort of official proclamation or anything like that. Bill, the music's about to play, so I don't want to get into it too much, but you're and we also had the schedule for most of yesterday, but your biggest takeaway or your snap reaction to the unveiling yesterday?
I would say pretty well done, SEC. I mean, as far as what Greg Sankey had said, preserving the biggest rivalries and trying to keep as many of the secondary rivalries and balancing, I thought it was overall a very good job by the Southeastern Conference. I'm pretty impressed. Everybody's a little disappointed at a game here or a game there. Mm-hmm. You know, you can nitpick, but I understand why they did certain things. And, we'll get into that coming up here in the second hour as well. And as you said, a big commitment, Auburn picking up Mighty Joe today, picking up a big-time prospect from just down the road in Tuskegee. So, we got a good bit to talk about.
We've had some recruiting experts on in the past who have talked about how, you know, if you're in an area that produces, you know, if you're within a region that produce, when your region produces big level high school talent, you know, the kind of talent that can impact the conference, you have to be in on them, and you have to be, you know, mm-hmm. you have to win more than your share, or at least your fair share of those kind of battles. And, you know, Auburn getting Falk out of Highland Home and going and getting now Mighty Joe from Tuskegee. I mean, these are important pieces to add to a team that's trying to sort of change the trend of high school recruiting, especially in the face of having seen some big time players leave and go elsewhere in the past. I mean, this is a really nice pickup. And Auburn, let's be real about it, Bill. Auburn, it's not always a win head to head against Georgia for these high school players.
It's not usually. I mean, it's very difficult. I know there are people that go, well, yeah, but he's closer to Auburn than he is Tuskegee, but it sure didn't look like, anybody was going to pry him away from Kirby Smart. So,
yeah.
Big win for Hugh Freeze.
Yeah, and by the way, not just Auburn. It's tough for anyone to go heads up with Georgia for a recruit and feel great about their chances.
I mean,
and
this
come
is
away
first
victorious.
Win since I keep coming back to Derek Brown.
Yeah, I think the last it might have been Ronnie Brown the last time Auburn won a head to head against Georgia. All right, we'll be back in hour number two. Bill Cameron might be in the studio. We'll see what ends up happening. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. We are going to talk with Jake Crane from Crane and Company. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to The Drive.
Number one. Oh, it's because I just got here. Dan's been here for an hour. It is the second hour of The
See
Drive.
See you, Bill. Gotta go.
Yep, that's well. You've done that a few times.
I've done that a couple
lately.
Times.
You had, I mean, you had a family thing the other day.
I had important
day.
Things to do. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well, I
not
did
like
too.
Today. Not like today.
I mean, was one where, you know, our boss is retiring and moving back home, which happens to be Baton Rouge, and so I mean, it was he's been a great guy to work for and work with. So I felt like, yeah, I needed to be there for that. And like I said at the end of last hour, I end up sort of hosting the thing. It's like, welcoming him and his wife and thanking him and introducing folks to say some things and give him a couple of presents. So, yeah, we had a good time. It was a blast. Here for hour number two, and we'd love your thoughts on anything going on in the world of sports. Jake Crane of Crane & Company joins us at the bottom of the hour. No, it's not Tuesday. Jake had some things going on Tuesday. He'll be joining us at a little after 5:30 this afternoon. We'll get his thoughts on the SEC schedule, winners, losers, and his thoughts on the, you know, from the Auburn perspective. Did you get any comments from folks there in the first hour? I mean, I've had quite a few people today that are disappointed that it's not more blown up. And then I had two that were disappointed.
With Auburn's schedule?
Yes. Or? Wanted it even more.
They weren't touching Bama and Georgia. I mean, beyond that.
It's like they didn't want Arkansas. I don't think anybody wanted Arkansas.
Yeah, I mean, I get that.
But I understand you put Arkansas in there to even things up. Because for the folks, including me yesterday, who was thinking that Florida was coming to Auburn, it appears to be a better matchup for Auburn talent-wise to have Arkansas coming in than Florida.
Yeah, we don't know the algorithms or anything, but I mean, if the SEC weighed the last 4 years or the last 5 or 6 or 10 years and thought, well,
they are getting the top two teams in the league.
And maybe the third. I mean, depending on third or fourth, depending on how you view Oklahoma.
Right.
I mean, so with Bama, Georgia, and
Oklahoma. You weigh it more heavily on last year than nowhere near third.
That's true, but what about the last 5 or the last 10, right?
Sure.
So, I mean, you think about if the SEC came up with a metric that had Auburn playing 3 of the top 4 or 3 of the top 5, it would make sense that you also have Auburn playing three of the bottom five
or something like that. Yes.
Which with Missouri Arkansas and Vanderbilt, you probably do.
Right.
So, I mean, I think all things considered,
I think it's fair.
Without trying to get into the science of projecting what any of these teams look like in 2024, you know, you feel like Alabama, Georgia, and LSU, right? You know, those are three programs that seem to have things rolling to a degree where, yeah, I mean, that's more often than not consistently a preseason top 5, preseason top 10 level. Like, that's where they are. Everyone else, it's a little bit more of a dice roll. And so I'm curious to see what these matchups look like, but it doesn't appear to be as disappointed as I am that Auburn LSU, you know, it was a rivalry that produced a lot of memories.
Oh, absolutely.
And it'll still be a fun game when it's played, but it was sacrificed, I think, for a new looking schedule, and Auburn's going to play some teams that they don't see all that often. And historically, you know, one would think Auburn has the advantage in some of those matchups.
Yeah, I would sure think so. Historically, there's no question.
Between what, I mean, Kentucky, Vanderbilt, Missouri, Arkansas, and A&M, right? I mean, those are five programs where, you know, your average Auburn season's better than
their average season.
Than the average season from those programs.
Yeah, now, and there were at least, I would say, three that I can think of that were like, well, this is going to stink for season tickets. And I look at it and I go, Oklahoma is a name. Now, a lot of people, you know, and none of us know, we don't know what any team is going to look like exactly by 2024.
Oh, and we have it's tougher than ever before.
Because of the transfer portal.
To predict what next year's depth chart is going to look
exactly
like,
right.
Especially at places that may see a coaching change.
But, I mean, when you look at the home schedule for Auburn in 2024, what wows you? I'm really excited about Oklahoma coming because these teams have never played on campus.
Yeah, I think Oklahoma is a game.
But the thing is, what I heard was Texas A&M and Arkansas, sort of done that enough times. That's not a huge wow. And then who's Vandy?
Well, A&M is a team that's, you know, they're probably in the top half of the league based on, like, whatever metric you're using, right? Last 5 years, you know, like the same, using those same sort of things. Like, A&M is a, you know, I guess.
A&M's an 8-win team, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, it's
which will get you in the upper half easily, yes.
Consistently an upper half, and mm-hmm. I guess that's what they were looking to give Auburn without necessarily giving Auburn LSU.
Yeah, and I think that's what fans more excited about LSU than Texas A&M, more excited about Florida than Arkansas. But, you know, do you want to buy the tickets to watch the other team, or do you want your team to have a better chance of winning?
Yeah, I don't know. To me, between Oklahoma and then getting also getting, I mean, a visit from Cal, which I know really may not fire up people who aren't more into the nuances of the sport. But I think between Oklahoma and Cal making visits that they never made before, I believe in the case
right.
of both programs.
Yes,
and then you've also got visits from Texas A&M and Arkansas, teams that you've played consistently as rivals over the last decade plus.
Ever since they've been in the conference.
Since they've joined the league. And in the case
you've
of
played
both
them
leagues,
every year.
Yeah, since they've joined the league, you've played them every year. And then you also have a visit from Vanderbilt for the first time in 8 years. To me, it's not. I mean, they could have made it more difficult. I mean, yes,
they could have made it more difficult, and that may have made it more, you know, interesting to look at the names. But I'd rather have games that I think I look at Auburn's schedule, and I can see Auburn, you know, not really having to stretch my imagination to think Auburn's got a shot at winning six conference games.
Oh, I mean, no, I think that between...
If you win the home games, split the road games, you're 6-2. Now, winning the home games isn't going to be that easy, but, I mean, I think you can do it.
I mean, between Bama, Georgia, and Oklahoma, right, you've got three teams that...
If you win one of those three and don't lose the others, which you should be favored in...
Right, that's
6-2.
I would probably agree with your assessment, while also acknowledging that a lot can change.
Sure.
Over 18 months between now and when the season gets into, well, I guess not even 18 months now, but we're talking a little over a year from now when next season gets into full swing. The Bama Georgia matchup is happening, Bill, as we talked about
Tuscaloosa, Georgia. Georgia has been charged with now trips to Tuscaloosa and to Austin, Texas.
Right. I mean, Georgia's got a pair of tough road games on the schedule. The Florida game endures in Jacksonville as well. They will also play. Are they at Tennessee in 24 as well?
I don't think so.
Or no, that game's in Knoxville in 23.
This year.
Yeah. So they'll host Tennessee. But some I was saying that the really any change to the schedule is going to make Georgia's schedule tougher. Than it is right now.
Could hardly make it less challenging than it is this year.
And I could see why ESPN would want some marquee matchups like Alabama and Texas on the Georgia added to the Georgia schedule. So it's I think that'll shake things up a little bit because you've got Georgia playing some really really big games in the regular season, which their schedule this season, it's lacking for really tantalizing matchups, especially because, as people point out, they had to scrap the Oklahoma game they were going to play this year out of conference because they had a game.
I think they should have kept that and then given them trips to Tuscaloosa and Austin.
Oh, they should be playing
just to make up for this year.
At a conference game against Oklahoma next year, too. They should find a way to work that
in the
schedule.
Yeah, I think they should.
You know, Oklahoma might have something to say about
Oklahoma's got something to say about the whole thing. Sooner fans are like, what are we doing?
Why do we sign up
for it? Get back into the Big 12.
Yeah, Oklahoma's wondering when they're playing Kansas State, right? They're wondering when some of these other Big 12 teams end up back on the schedule. You're right. That's going to be it's a new era in this conference when Texas and Oklahoma show up and there are some games that hard to believe they're conference games that we're going to see when that 2024 season kicks off.
We'd love your thoughts. Who do you think were winners, losers? Again, we'll talk with Jake Crane at the bottom of the hour, get his thoughts on that. Auburn picking up a big commitment. That is big. He's not a little guy, around 6'3", 240 or so, and Joe Phillips from Tuskegee that most folks had thought was a done deal to the Georgia Bulldogs until this weekend.
Yeah, what a pickup for Hugh Freeze and company to land somebody in the region and somebody that was so heavily targeted by the Georgia Bulldogs. Georgia does not lose very many of these battles, and that's a big pickup.
Yeah, and don't pay any attention to some Georgia fans that might say, "Ah, we didn't want him, and he's in your backyard anyway," and we let you have one there. Now, they really did want him, and he's a guy that's really hasn't been playing football that long and has a tremendous upside. Auburn, I think, likes him as a Jack.
Maybe the proximity helped. Like it may, maybe
oh, that
fact,
absolutely
yeah,
didn't hurt.
Maybe the fact that
for the family,
yeah,
I mean, no,
maybe
for
the
sure.
fact that he's so close to Auburn helped. But, I mean, I don't think that's – Georgia's gone into other people's backyards.
Yes, they have.
And won recruiting battles before. So that hasn't stopped them in the past. It's a really nice pickup for Hugh Freeze at a position where, you know, we've been talking about how much this defense could change after this season is over. And if you recruit – impact high school players, you become less reliant on the transfer portal to fill those gaps in the roster. And this sounds like a player who could be looking for playing time from the moment he gets on campus.
Interesting. Our buddy Barrett Salee, who was on with us on Tuesday, ranks the teams from toughest to the easiest schedule. He has Oklahoma with the toughest conference schedule, still has Auburn with the second toughest, because Auburn's the only school that has to go to the top two teams in the conference.
Is he with me on Arkansas and A&M getting the easiest draws because no Bama, no Georgia?
Let's see. I passed one of them, so no. He has Arkansas with the best or the easiest schedule, Texas with the second easiest.
Interesting, Texas.
Because Texas has
no Bama and they host Georgia.
At home, yeah, they host Georgia, Florida, Kentucky, Mississippi State. They go to A&M, Arkansas, Vandy, and they play Oklahoma and Dallas.
So it's one of the years where the Oklahoma game is a road game for Texas. So they're going to play four.
Right.
They're going to play four games in Austin and a fifth game.
Only three true road games there at Texas A&M, Arkansas, and Vandy.
And wait,
Whoa.
The three road games Texas plays
are Texas A&M, and Arkansas, and Vandy.
All right, and there are going to be some Texas fans at that Texas A&M
and
game.
And there's going to be some at Arkansas. And
there's going to be some of the Arkansas.
There'll be
game.
Some in Dallas. And then, you know, there'll be two-thirds of the stadium in Nashville.
Yeah, so they're not
so playing. They will not play in front of a hostile crowd, terribly hostile, one-sided hostile crowd all year.
Texas
is pretty good
for
Texas.
They're four road games. Granted, they host Georgia, but their four road games are at the Texas State Fair,
yep.
College Station, Texas,
yep.
Fayetteville, Arkansas, in front of a crowd that's going to, like you said, that there will be a noticeable, although the last time Texas went to Arkansas, that place was a hornet's nest.
Oh, yes.
So it's not a joke for Arkansas if they feel like they got a chance to beat them.
Yeah, but that shoe's on the other foot a little bit this time.
And then they're going to Nashville.
Yeah.
Where, like
yeah,
you
I can
said,
understand, that, Barrett. I don't know that I disagree with that.
That is a pretty solid draw for Texas.
And he's got LSU with the 14th toughest schedule because LSU has Alabama, Oklahoma, Ole Miss, and Vandy at home. They're at Arkansas, Florida, South Carolina, and A&M.
And so I suppose the thinking there is those are four favorable road games for LSU.
And they've got the toughest game they have is at home. In Alabama.
I think maybe the two toughest games.
And they don't
have
Georgia.
I mean, we were talking about this in the first hour. If I had to guess, and again, it's inexact science.
Oh, I think Oklahoma should be better than A&M.
That's my guess, too. So I think maybe the second toughest game on LSU's schedule
is also at home.
And so when you're looking at your four road games being games where you might have the advantage in all four games, and granted, some of that has to do with LSU's talent, but that does read as a favorable schedule when you don't have to go on the road and face a team that might be at your level or above it, which is the case with the Texas schedule you said. Granted, Oklahoma is a neutral site game. We'll see what happens there. But then with LSU, yeah, the four road games feel like favorable draws.
We'd love to hear from you. We'll get to our first break. Hour number two of The Drive, brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And you can join us by calling the Kia of Auburn hotline, Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one, and the number to get you through, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, open 24/7, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. The podcast is fixed.
Oh, is it back everywhere?
Apple Podcasts is working. Checked it earlier today. I believe we've reloaded the missing episodes as well, so you can find the podcast back on your Apple Podcast feed. Spotify's been working for a couple of days. You can go to ESPNAU.com and get to the, go to the Podcast Center, get episodes that way. Just go to your favorite podcasting platform, search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. You should find it. You know what I'm going to start saying? Like, rate, review the podcast. So you're subscribing to it, and you know, leave a positive review or something too if you subscribe on whatever channel. You know, give us a write something nice about us. We don't ask you to do that much. You know, leave a review or something. That'd be good. Do that and show that you're show that you're listening. We appreciate that. All presented, by the way, by Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
We'll get to our first break of hour number two. Come on and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
Hey there, it's Barbie Agricola with Agricola Law. My team and I would like to thank everyone who voted us best law firm and best...
Email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday afternoon, 21 minutes after 5 o'clock, and let's get to the Kia of Auburn hotline, and Tommy is up first. Hey, Tommy.
Hey, hope you're all doing good.
Yeah, doing fine.
Hey, so in 2024, there won't be any division. So how is the SEC championship game contestants going to be decided? I mean, the top two teams
as far as record in the SEC, if they're ties, then they'll go head to head.
So four teams are 7-1.
Yeah, then they'll do the tiebreakers of how they did against each other.
Yeah, we're seeing more conferences get away from divisions and just choose the top two teams because there have been years where division play
too many years.
There have been years where division play creates a situation where, you know, a mediocre team from one division wins and a really good team from another division is the runner-up in their own. So I think conferences want the flexibility to just pick the top two teams in the league with everyone sort of playing a similar enough schedule.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Appreciate the call, Tommy.
I would be win percentage, and then they'd go to tiebreakers.
Right, it would be tiebreakers if teams have the same record. You'd start with how they did head-to-head. If it were two teams, if they played head-to-head. If not, how they played against the team either immediately ahead or behind them. Multiple teams, how they did against all three, you know, however many teams are tied.
Yeah, and there's the chance, too, of, you know, if there's an uneven number of games, cancellations, things like that, you know, you get into, yeah, they would.
Yeah, that's rare, though.
Yeah, especially now. We had cancellations.
Right.
Previously, you know, but yeah, you're right. It's less common now, and that would be they would go to win percentages and things like that.
Forget divisions. Divisions are done as far as the SEC is concerned. Back to the Kia of Auburn hotline, and Jerry is next. Hey, Jerry.
Guys, by my count, we've got 8 commits.
Yes,
and the lowest ranked commit is a wide receiver from Baker who can run a 4.
Yeah, that's
Bryce.
Yeah, Bryce King. Couldn't think of his first name there at the beginning. Yeah, I feel like his ranking is going to go up. But I tell you, from what we hear, the Auburn coaches could care less what he's rated. They really, really like him a lot. He was the best receiver at Auburn's first elite camp last week, and they really, really want him. So they're very pleased with the way things are going. You know, I'm sure everyone is waiting for an offensive lineman or two to drop.
Yeah, everything's sounding good, though.
Oh, yeah, no question.
All right, I'll let you go.
Appreciate the call, Jerry. Go ahead.
One other question. When is the Major League Baseball draft?
Major League Baseball draft usually is, well, it's about this time. Usually it's the end of June. I will check. I know it's coming up soon. It may be early in July this year.
Well,
so
you know, a lot of times it's in the World Series.
It is. I think they've tried.
I think it's
July 9th is when it starts this year. So they're trying. I think they're trying to push it back after, so it's not really in the middle of the College World Series.
I believe they made a decision to start having it on All-Star Weekend as part of the festivities for the Major League Baseball All-Star
Game. So is the All-Star Game the 11th?
I think that's correct.
Because, the draft starts on Sunday, July 9th, and runs through Tuesday the 11th, and the Major League All-Star Game's that night.
And they usually don't have the All-Star Game on July 4th.
No,
right? So they push it to a week later.
All-Star Game's always on a Tuesday, though.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. See you See you guys.
Yeah, so now they can have the minor league All-Star games and the major league draft going on. Leading up, yeah. Along with the, are they doing a celebrity All-Star game anymore?
This was also, I think they still do the softball game on Monday night after the home run
derby.
Yeah,
I was wondering if they did. I was wondering if they did.
I believe they do.
And then a home run derby, of course.
I think they do the home run derby and then a celebrity All-Star game on the field afterward. This is the first year they had the lottery for the baseball draft as well. That was, it was a few months ago.
Right, they used to rotate. You know, leagues
now,
by the worst records.
I believe in an attempt to discourage tanking, now they're taking the bottom six and giving them all an equal chance of having the first overall pick rather than automatically giving the first overall pick to the team with the worst record.
And don't look now, but the Oakland A's may not be the worst team in baseball this year, and maybe the Royals.
It could, yeah. Well, the A's are, don't look now, but the A's are hot, right?
They have been, yeah. 7-game winning streak they had.
It'd be fun if they kept winning. That scene the other night with the fans chanting, sell the team, and having silent boycotts and stuff was pretty incredible. But the draft is scheduled for July 9th.
We'll get another call before we get to our bottom of the hour break, and Kerry is up next. Hey, Kerry.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Doing fine.
Hey, I just had a quick question. So with this 8-game conference schedule with the expansion of 14 teams, theoretically you could have 4 teams go undefeated within this new conference or this new conference schedule. Do you know what the tiebreakers are if theoretically 3 or 4 teams were to go undefeated?
Well, the standard tiebreakers for the SEC have always been first head-to-head, and obviously they wouldn't have played each other if four teams go unbeaten. Then it would go to the It would start with their record against the next highest rated team and then on down. So, I mean, if they have no games in common, it goes against the next teams in the standings till they're eliminated. I mean, usually, say it's more likely that you might have 4 teams with a 7-1 record. Then you'd probably be able to eliminate one with a head-to-head. The likelihood would be one of them lost to one of the others. That would eliminate them. And when you get to 3, it's easier. You bump one and then see if they went head-to-head.
They're also going to have the expanded college football playoff in 24, correct?
Right.
You'll have so that would be in an era of 2, like in a BCS era or a.
But for a championship game, you need to determine 2.
I know you need to determine 2, but. I think the consolation prize in that situation.
Oh yeah, if all 4 went unbeaten, you probably got 4 teams in the playoffs.
You still have more to play for, even if you get left out of the SEC.
Heck, then you're probably hoping that you lose the tiebreaker and don't have to play an SEC title game.
You know, people get blown away when I mention this, but and I don't know if Alabama has something similar, Bill, but Florida had the football shootout to break 3- and 4-way ties. Where they would have 3 teams go to.
They'd go to one site.
I went to one. Niceville.
Oh, yeah, I remember those.
Niceville, Choctaw, and I think it was a school from Pensacola, did a round robin where they play like two
sort
teams.
Sort of like the spring games, the spring jamborees.
Flip, yeah, coin flip decided which 2 teams played first, and those 2 teams played a quarter, and then because one of the 2 teams was winning after 1 quarter, the other team went on the field and played the team that was winning, and. Because the team that won the first quarter then scored and won the second quarter against the new team, they were declared the winner of the tiebreak, and that was how they broke.
Don't think you're going to see that in the SEC.
I don't think so either. Wouldn't that be something in an SEC championship game?
Yeah.
But it was.
I'd like to see that instead of the SEC championship. No, I don't know. That all you had? Yeah.
Board or something. So, because it's theoretical, obviously, probably won't happen. But that's not that'd be. Crazy!
Oh, it would be. It'd be wild.
4 undefeated teams, like who are the 2 teams that play?
I imagine at some point they would go to college football playoff ranking to decide which top 2. Like
if it came down and all the tiebreakers were the same,
like
if
everything
probably would be.
Can't find a way. Like I know the SEC had a BCS ranking tiebreak, you know, back in the day to determine these sorts of things. So I think at some point it would go to the college football playoff ranking to maybe take the top 2 teams in that of the 4.
Gotcha. Let's see. Appreciate you guys. Really appreciate the show. Really
appreciate the call, Kerry. Yeah, good question. 334-321-1390. We'll hold calls for a little while because we're going to get to the Kia of Auburn hotline and bring in Jake Crane of Crane & Company when we come back for the final half hour of the Thursday Drive.
Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Dan, Drew back at the controls. Did Dan welcome you back, Drew? Yes. Oh, okay, good, good. Good to have Drew back. And it's, yeah, we normally have him with us on Tuesdays, but it's even better to have him on today after the official word came out yesterday about the SEC 2024 schedule, conference schedule, that is opponents, for every team, as we welcome in Jake Crane of Crane & Company. Jake, how you doing today, man?
Man, I'm doing great, guys. Appreciate y'all allowing me a couple days. Had a little something to take care of that we're really excited about. But, yeah, the timing's pretty good.
Jake, we had a caller just point out, you know, he was asking about tiebreaker scenarios because with the new SEC schedule for 2024, he noted that
– No division champs.
No division right. – well, no, not just no division champs, but you could have a scenario – where four
more than two teams
and I right. was doing a little bit of math. There is a scenario and just looking at it. So Auburn, LSU, Texas, and Tennessee don't play each other in 2024. In theory, all four of those teams could go 8-0 and the SEC would have to figure
out. Or they could all finish with the same record.
They could all
at
finish
the top.
With the same record. It's just,
and the tiebreaker would do nothing. The first tiebreaker of head-to-head would mean nothing.
They'd probably go to the football playoff rankings or something if it were, you know, a multi-team sort of disaster there. But this was not – it would be a new problem to encounter. This is one of many interesting scenarios that jump out after the SEC remade the schedule and unveiled it last night, Jake.
So, Jake, what do you think, man? I think really hats off, applause to the SEC. I think they did about as well as they could when they were trying to preserve longtime rivalries and secondary rivalries and try to balance it. What about you?
Yeah, especially with the 8-game in conference schedule, I think they did as good as they possibly could. You know, there's so many different variables. You obviously want as many big matchups as possible, and typically those are rivalries. Those things go hand in hand. But it's impossible to get everybody to play everyone that you want to in a normal schedule, let alone when you add two teams to the conference and don't add games. Now, when it comes to some of the rivalries that are quote-unquote lost, none of the huge rivalries I thought were lost, but it's not like they're never going to play.
Right.
I mean, it's not like you have the scenario where we have with some schools right now that haven't played each other for 20 years and are in the same conference. Now, when it comes to the tiebreakers, you know, there were some crazy tiebreaker scenarios when we had divisions, but I would much rather take the risk of that happening, which is very, very, you know, I guess rare or not likely to happen, and get the two best teams in mm-hmm. the conference championship
oh, yeah.
game, as opposed to the limited amount of teams that you can have when you have divisions. I mean, the Big Ten's a great example. The Big Ten West, who hadn't been very good for a while now, the two best teams in the Big Ten were Michigan and Ohio State. They're getting rid of divisions. Now those two teams can play each other, even if it is back-to-back. Sometimes it works out like that. The two best teams need to play each other in the conference championship game. And now, even with the 8-game in-conference schedule, the way they're doing it, you will play every team home and away through a four-year career. And to me, there's no such thing as even scheduling because teams are cyclical, but that's about as close as you can possibly get.
Couple of interesting slates as far as team, you know, the four home games or the four road games. They've got Auburn's four home games in 2024. We assumed Alabama and Georgia weren't going anywhere as road games for the 24 team. The home games were up in the air. Oklahoma will make their first ever visit to Jordan-Hare Stadium as a first ever regular season meeting between the two programs. That should be a huge historic event. A&M and Arkansas, a pair of teams that Auburn has played every year since they joined the SEC, will continue their respective series against Auburn. And Vanderbilt makes their first visit to Auburn since 2016. What do you think of the draw as far as those four home games for Auburn?
Yeah, you know, I think when you look at it, there's no way you were going to get out of this thing unscathed. I guess South Carolina is the closest possible team to getting out of it unscathed, which I know Shane Beamer, a lot of people in South Carolina are upset. Shane Beamer's probably, you know, doing somersaults in his office right now because 10-2 is a lot more feasible with that schedule. But look, when it comes to some of these rivalries we just talked about of you know, games that may not be the truest of rivalries you have, but you've played each other so much, I think you're going to see new rivalries created with the way this is going. It's like math. It's neither created nor destroyed. So you're going to have some that become rivalries, Texas and Texas A&M that haven't played in a while. You're going to get that one back. So while you lose some, you gain some. But I thought Auburn made out pretty well. Look, we all know how tough it is when you have Georgia and Alabama stacked either home or away every year. That off year where you got to go to Tuscaloosa and to Athens, you know it's going to be tough. But outside of that, I thought it was a pretty good draw when you look at it. So I don't think Hugh Freeze and them were super upset when that came out.
No, because they knew they were going to be going to Tuscaloosa and Athens.
Yeah.
And I thought the rest of it.
So funny.
Yeah.
I've been laughing, Bill, at some of these other fan bases that are like, wait, we got to play Bama and Georgia and LSU? And I'm sort of like, yeah, welcome to our lives, yeah. Buddy.
That's right.
First
yeah,
time.
Yeah, we've been doing it every year.
First time, huh?
Yeah. Now, you know, I sort of, you know, lamented a little bit Arkansas being on there. I mean, I'm sort of tired of that when I could have stood someone else. But I understand when you look over the last, you know, over the recent past, Arkansas should be easier than bringing somebody like Florida. And that's sort of who I was hoping would be on the home schedule was Florida, because it's been a while since the Gators have been at Auburn. But I actually have to credit the SEC, because Florida should be better than Arkansas when you just look at it, you know, and in the big picture.
Yeah, I'll take it. I will take that 100% of the time. I was shocked that Alabama got the short end of the stick for once when it came down to the SEC and some sort of scheduling. Nick Saban said, please don't give me Auburn, Tennessee, and LSU in the same year. They gave him that plus Texas.
And a visit from Georgia.
Oh, Oklahoma. They got a trip to Oklahoma.
Oklahoma and Georgia.
Yeah, well, I mean, that doesn't mean that they're going to continue those three, but you had to keep those three if you want to keep top and secondary rivalries for 2024. So, yeah, it was a little bit here. How about back at you, Nick?
So Jake, I thought it was interesting the conference did not schedule anyone against Alabama, Georgia, and LSU. No one drew all three of those teams on their schedule. We were looking at, you know, if you're trying to predict favorable or unfavorable draws, I immediately think A&M and Arkansas got favorable draws because they're the two teams that don't play either Alabama or Georgia in 2024.
You look at it a little closer, and it's like, it looks pretty favorable for Texas, not quite so favorable for Oklahoma.
For Texas, I mean, the thought that their four road games are going to be played at the Texas State Fair, in College Station, in Fayetteville, and in Nashville against Vanderbilt. I mean, as Bill said, they're not going to face, aside from the game at Arkansas, they're not going to face a truly hostile opposing crowd all year.
No, I mean, and you look regionally, you don't have to go too far.
No.
It makes travel a lot easier. You know, it's not like USC and UCLA. You've got to travel halfway across the country.
I should correct myself briefly. A&M's going to be pretty hostile.
It'll be hostile. It'll be hostile, but it's not a terribly long road trip.
You're right. The travel, you know, the appeal is there, but it's not, as far as the travel especially, it's not nearly as grueling.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, if you're worried about playing in hostile crowds on the road, the SEC's not the conference.
That's right.
I'm more worried about the travel and all that stuff, and because it does take a toll on your guys. It changes, you know, the routine when you have to go out there 2 days early. I've been a part of it, having to go to San Diego State and all these places, UC Davis, on the West Coast, or these far trips. It takes a toll on you. So I do think that it's favorable, but look, 4 years from now, we'll be talking about how Texas got the hardest schedule in the world. So I think some of them are in for a little bit of a wake-up call.
Yeah, that's the good thing, is that it is going to, over a four-year period, everybody's going to have played about the same schedule. Again, nobody will be playing Alabama and Georgia except Auburn and Tennessee. So it'll always be a little bit tougher for them. It's just up to Auburn and Tennessee to get better, and Tennessee's already trying to do its part.
Yeah, well, I want to say this, too. I think there's something we're forgetting. You know, not you guys, but a lot of college football fans. When you get to this 12-team playoff, you're going to start hearing the term bubble team, right, like we hear in college basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're a bubble team at the end of the year in college basketball, what do you need? You need to play good teams.
Strength of schedule. That's right.
Yes, You don't want to just have a bunch of cupcakes because then you don't control your own destiny and you're just hoping somebody else has to lose. So I think a lot of it is a mindset thing when it comes down to it. I want to be able to control my own destiny because at least at the end of the day, I know it's on me.
One thing that we didn't hear last night, I would love, and I guess that's just the way it is with any selection committee or anything. You sort of get vague information. I'd love to know the kind of formula that they used or they're going to be using as they build schedules in the future. You know, is it going to be based very heavily on the past year or the recent past? I hope they're not going back over, you know, more than 4 or 5 years when they're basing strength of schedule for a schedule to be put together.
Yeah, you know, the formula would be interesting because I think there's so many variables now. We obviously know that the TV deals, that they want the best games possible so you can draw the most viewers. You have the rivalry angle, obviously. And look, it's an ever-changing stand.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Because it's cyclical. Teams come in cycles. 4 years from now, Florida may be a juggernaut. You just don't know. So,
well, 2 years ago, who thought Tennessee was going to be anything?
That's exactly right. So you're kind of guessing, but what I'm looking and finding fascinating is, you know, these teams that are scheduling games now, like in 2029 and 2030, how much less of that are you going to see?
Much.
Because it's such a different world from a scheduling standpoint.
Yeah, and don't you think that this 1 year deal is I think it's set up very well by the SEC as well to say, oh, you want to see Auburn LSU again? You want to see Texas LSU, or you want to see some of those? We need a ninth game. And if we get a ninth game, we need more money.
That's exactly right. Look, this is all a means to an end. And something we talked about on the show is that, look, you know, fans and representatives of universities, they want what's best for their university. And they should. That's how it should be. Greg Sankey's goal is to make as much money as possible for the SEC. So you have the leverage of being the big dog in college football, and then ESPN has the leverage of saying, well, this is what's in the contract. You know, if I pay you to build me a back deck and you put a grill on it and want to charge me for it, I didn't ask for that, so I'm not going to pay for it. But you're going to start hearing a little bit from some of these teams, and universities and fans mostly that, hey, we want this game. Oh, we want this game. And don't think that Greg Sankey and them in the back of their mind don't know that. This is, again, it's kind of like the military, right? We get stuff that technology that's 25 years old to them. We're hearing things that they want us to hear, and it's going the way that he wants it to go. Greg Sankey is going to eventually get what he wants.
Mm-hmm. You know, Jake, I had somebody ask me, you know, why can't ESPN just come up with the extra $80 or $100 million or whatever it would be? Because I think folks think that these, you know, these corporations are bottomless pits of money, and in some cases they can be when they're spending on something they really want to spend on. But I can understand why, and we're seeing this with other rights deals being negotiated across sports. I can understand why folks that are reliant on cable subscriptions are reluctant about getting into long-term deals because the numbers are trending in the wrong direction as far as the number of Americans every quarter who subscribe to cable and still consume cable television. And, you know, if 120 million people had cable in 2016 and that number drops to 50 or 55 million by 2026, you know, it starts to get dicey for places like ESPN that have huge rights deals.
Yeah, you know, look, it's almost turning into the newspaper of you know, today a little bit, because you can now kind of pinpoint, it's almost like bundling insurance, right? You can pinpoint what you want. Like me, for example, me and my wife, we have YouTube TV, we have Netflix, we have Amazon Prime. I don't need some cable package or anything like that. I don't need all those channels. I know what I want to watch. I know where it is, and I think that's where we're heading. It's just the way it works. So, yeah, I think you're going to continue to see a decrease. That's why I'm so fascinated to see the streaming angle that I think we're going down. Look at the NFL right now. You're seeing that a little bit more and a little bit more. So when it comes down to it, I think you're going to have kind of an a la carte, what I call kind of viewership. well, I want this, I want this. I don't want all of it. I don't want everything on the menu. I want this, 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 and this. So, yeah, I mean, look, they're going to go where the money goes. And if they think people think it's a bad investment and there's too much fluff or too much extra fat on the cable subscriptions and they can go get something they know they want to watch for a cheaper price or that has more of the stuff they want to watch on it, they're going to go that way. And why would college football be different?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there have been way, way too many years where I've left too many unwanted vegetables there on my TV platter.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Jake, man, this is great. I'm glad that the SEC did this because, you know, there's recruiting, there's camp times and things like that going on, but it's a lot of lists and things like that are going on right now. This has been some great info because you're hearing from all 16 fan bases what they like, what they don't like. That's a great boost here in the middle of June as we're just getting weeks away from media days.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's funny. It seems like all these big stories either drop on media days or right before media days. It's funny how that happens.
Oh, but yeah, it's just coincidence.
Look, yeah, it's a total coincidence. But at the end of the day, it is so interesting because it's new. You know what I'm saying? And mm-hmm. It isn't something that I think is drastic, even though it is scheduling. We know scheduling is very important. It isn't as drastic as what we saw with the NIL and the freedom of the transfer portal. But I think this is something that most fans wanted and most players wanted and a lot of coaches wanted. The biggest holdup for some of these coaches going to the ninth game, a little bit of it was the non-conference schedule they were already locked into for 2024. So I think you're going to see kind of an easing back on some of the negative rhetoric from these universities about going to that ninth game once they kind of see the success a little bit of it. And it just makes sense, right? When's the last time that you guys can remember a big decision like this just making sense? They made like the most sensible decision that they possibly could. Yep. I can't remember it. And not to say that it's not motivated by money. We all know everything's motivated by money. Just ask Jay Monahan in the PGA Tour, which is a story for a different day. But they made a sensible, smart decision that the fans wanted. Most of the fans wanted. I can't believe it, to be honest with you, and I'm applauding it, and I will always say great when it's great and bad when it's bad.
I'm absolutely with you, but Greg Sankey has proven time and time again he's got a lot more sense than the NCAA. So, hey,
look,
college
football czar, sign him up.
He should be, no question.
Black robe.
Jake, we're just about out of time. Let everybody know what you got. I'm sure there's plenty of great stuff coming up on Crane & Company.
Oh, man, we've had a ton. We're talking a ton of college football right now, getting ready. Obviously, everything else in the world, NBA finals and everything. Go to Crane & Company. It's on YouTube, CRAIN and Company. You can go to the Daily Wire or the sports show there. And it's a great time. Just had Josh Pate. Had Shannon Perry on today, and we're starting to move into the football playing. I know it's still talking season, but we're almost a walking season, boys. But I appreciate it, guys.
Hey, Jake. Have a great weekend, man.
Y'all too.
Jake Crane joining us, as he normally does on Tuesdays. We appreciate him knocking out some time today. Great on the day after the SEC announces the 2024 opponents. We'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
Kia of Auburn would like to wish everyone...
Welcome back in. Final minute or so of the Thursday Drive. Our thanks to Jake Crane for joining us. Hopefully you got to hear all Jake's comments. Or if you missed any of Jake's comments or the show, check out the podcast.
That's right. The podcast is back and fully functional. So you can check out the podcast on your favorite podcasting platform. Apple, Google, Spotify, ESPNAU.com, the Podcast Center. It's all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Well, what is it the kids say, Drew? Is it like, review, subscribe? You do that. So yeah, do that stuff on the different platforms too, and that can that can help us out in different ways. That'll game the algorithm to tell Google the different services about us. So yeah, use the. It's all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Now tomorrow is Ferguson.
That's right.
Tomorrow,
Justin Ferguson is back in America, and we will have him on the show tomorrow.
That is good. Looking forward to that. We're out of time here though. On the Thursday Drive, thanks to Carter for filling in while I was unavailable there for a while, and Jake Crane and all of you listeners. We'll be back tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.